Good morning. It is a Thursday morning, October 27th, 2016. I'm Steve Cole. Thanks for listening this morning, and thank you once again for your support during our recent successful membership drive. If you have not received your ballot, you can still vote in Colorado up until Election Day. Eric Galata spoke with VP of the League of Women Voters, who has other tips for voters.
The presidential election is just under 2 weeks away, and many Colorado residents have already received ballots by mail. Voters face a long list of choices this year: national, state, and local candidates, ballot initiatives, amendments, and judges. And Kath Perrone with the League of Women Voters of Colorado says voter fatigue is a real concern. She's encouraging people to get informed and vote all the way down the ballot.
And this election not only is for the highest office in the land, there's a lot of local races that are going to be critical in the day-to-day lives of citizens throughout the state of Colorado.
She says the Blue Book, sent to every registered household, has comprehensive information about everything on the ballot, and the League is also offering streamlined pro and con takes on issues online at vote411.org. Perrone adds that in Colorado, you can register to vote and cast a ballot at polling locations until 7 p.m. on November 8th. One question Perrone hears a lot is which judges should be retained. She says it's worth reading the one-page summaries offered by commissioners who visit courtrooms and collect feedback from jurors and workers to produce job reviews for each judge.
They're looking at the overall performance of the judge on things like integrity, legal knowledge, their communication skills, their temperament.
Perrone says for voters concerned about a potential rigged election, Colorado's county clerk procedures, along with official observers, leave little room for manipulation. She says if voters want extra assurance, counties offer a way to track ballots online.
You put in your birth date and your first digit of your address, and it'll bring up your ballot and tell you when it was mailed to you and if they've received it back yet or not.
All registered voters should receive a mailed ballot, even if they didn't vote in the last election. But Perrone says if you didn't receive one, you can go into a polling center and fill out another. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatas.
Roaring Fork School District wants public input on attendance boundaries for the new combined elementary and middle school south of Glenwood Springs on the site referred to as East Bank. District officials are hosting three community meetings to present different boundaries being considered. You can make your voice heard and get your questions answered. The first meeting is tonight from 6 to 7 at Sopris Elementary. Other opportunities are coming up November 3rd at Glenwood Middle School from 6 to 7 and November 7th at Glenwood Elementary from 5 to 6. If you are unable to attend, you can still provide feedback through an online survey on the school district's website. A Spanish interpreter will also be on hand at each meeting. Learn more about the new East Bank School on our local newscast coming up with Amy Haddon Marsh. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Steve. Adam Volek is principal of the new elementary and middle school that Roaring Fork School District will open next fall. News director Gavin Dahl sat down with him for an update.
The groundbreaking happened in the spring. We're going through the process of determining the school name, school color, school mascot, all the important things about the school. So in Glenwood, the schools are pretty much at their maximum capacity. And so we're excited to provide a new building, which will relieve some of the overcrowding in Glenwood. We're focused on a couple of different things, and this is what was passed by the voters, just around making sure that students don't have to travel large distances to get to school, that we are building a school that also is representative of the demographics of the entire community, and that, again, back to that relief of overcrowding, that we are accomplishing that goal as well.
Voters were asked to approve this bond. The voters said, yes, we support our schools. What attracted you to this project?
You know, I have had a really cool experience as an educator, and spent a lot of time teaching in the middle school where I was teaching language arts, became the assistant principal and principal of an elementary school. So I had kind of this K-8 experience that we're talking about having at East Bank. Last year, I was also considered an instructional superintendent for Denver Public Schools, and I was coaching principals at six different schools in the northwest part of Denver, which was a phenomenal experience and just an insight to, you know, many of the things that need to change in public education. Just to have had a passion for working working with English language learners. This was an opportunity to take all of that experience and build a school from the ground up. So having the experience that I have, it allows me to look at the school in kind of a different way around how we can really make sure that we're engaging the entire community and building something that's very special that meets the needs of every single student at the school.
Talking to Adam Volek, principal of Roaring Fork School District's new school, one of the things about being in Southeast Denver is you're very comfortable in these environments where you have different languages spoken in the homes of your students.
Mm-hmm. So the school that I'm coming from had 28 different languages spoken at it.
Wow.
So one of the things that is a passion of mine is just working in a setting where maybe English isn't the first language spoken at home.
Give us an update on the construction. So you guys are planning to open August of 2017.
Yep. And that's something that's really important to know. I've gotten a lot of questions from our community around when is the school open? Is it on track? Is it on time to open? And it absolutely is. I attend weekly meetings with the construction crew and everything is set to open in August.
Between now and then, you are a busy, busy principal, even though you don't have any students yet. Talk about what you're doing to get the community involved.
Community involvement is one of the biggest aspects of the work right now, and it's something that we're really making sure that we're paying attention to. We want this to be a community school, a school where we're building it based off of what the community wants, what the community needs. We have designed a process to really collect as much information as we possibly can. We have a school advisory committee right now that is pretty much comprised of a large representation from the entire community district-wide, and we have students who are involved in it, parents who are involved in it, community members. That particular team is getting ready to create a survey that they're going to send out to the entire community. And we really need the community's input on this that will cover a variety of different things, whether that's program design at the school, the school's culture, or about the mascot, school name, school colors, all of those things. So we really want the entire community across the entire district buying into the new East Bank School.
So these meetings happen every Wednesday?
From 4:30 to 6:30 in the Sopris cafeteria. If you'd like more information about that, anybody can go on to the district's website and they can find the East Bank Community School on there.
On the subject of boundaries and who exactly will be enrolled in your school when it opens next year, there is the first of three meetings to talk specifically about that subject.
That's right. Thursday night, 6 o'clock is the first of the community boundary meetings, and there will be a presentation followed by some opportunity for question and answer. There's another one the following week, Thursday, November 3rd, 5:30 to 6:30 at Glenwood Springs Middle School.
Adam Volek, I'm really excited to follow along in this process as it develops, and I hope you'll come back to KD&K and give us updates.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be honored. Thank you.
Almost 40 million people are dependent on the Colorado River. Historically, the economic value of the river was based on what the water could be used for, like agriculture or mining. But as Maeve Conran reports for Connecting the Drops, more people are pointing to the economic value of keeping water in the river.
The Fraser River in Grant County is a tributary of the Colorado River, which starts in Rocky Mountain National Park. It runs through the heart of the town of Fraser and neighboring Winter Park. These towns attract skiers in winter and fly fishers and outdoor enthusiasts the rest of the year.
And the recreation is all based around the river. You know, the snowmaking water for all of our ski areas comes out of a river. And it's the base, it's the absolute base of the recreational system.
Dennis Saffel has been a real estate broker for 34 years in the mountain communities of Grand and Summit counties. He says there's a direct connection to property values and proximity to the river.
If your property is on a river or has a view of a river, it's going to be substantially more expensive, regardless of what it is, a condominium, a house. It's going to be substantially more expensive than a property that's not on the river.
Saffel says a loss of flow in the river would likely decrease the values for all properties in these mountain communities that are dependent on the river for a tourism economy. That's something that others in Western Slope communities are well aware of, including Jim Pokrant with the Colorado River District. That's the principal water policy and planning agency for the Colorado River Basin within the state.
We understand that water left in the river is important to the economy, and if we had dried up rivers, then we'd have degradation of our West Slope economy.
Pokrant says that the fortunes of many western slope towns hinge on understanding that the strength of local economies is beginning to shift from taking water out of the river to leaving it in.
We've developed rafting. That's a big deal. Skiing. That's a big deal now. Hunting, fishing. This is our economy here on the West Slope. Yes, ag is still big, and yes, there's still some mining. But our new economy is based on water in the rivers here in Western Colorado.
Historically, most Colorado water rights have involved uses that divert water from the streams. But back in the early 1970s, lawmakers began to recognize the need to create rights allowing water to remain in the river to help protect ecology. But that was just a first step. Now, 43 years later, a lot of water is still being taken out of the Colorado River system and diverted to the east. There are 13 major Trans Mountain diversions and many other smaller ones. This concerns advocates like Craig Mackey, co-director of Protect the Flows.
In the 21st century, we have an economic reason to have the river itself. The recreation economy, the tourism economy. And I think the hardest one to quantify or really get your hands around is a quality of life economy.
The nonprofit advocates for conservation of the Colorado River Basin, pointing to the connection between a healthy river and healthy economies. Again, Craig Mackey.
People want to live here. People want to locate here. They want to grow businesses here. They want to live here. They want to raise their families here. And water and, you know, our snow in the mountains, which becomes the water in our rivers, is a huge part of the, you know, a huge driver in that quality of life economy that we're so lucky to have here in the state of Colorado.
Protect the Flows worked with Arizona State University in 2014 on the first study on the economic impact of the Colorado River. It found that the major waterway generates $1.4 trillion in economic benefits annually throughout the entire seven-state river basin. In Colorado, the tourism and outdoor recreation economy tied to the river brings in more than $9 billion annually. The Colorado Water Plan acknowledges the need to keep water in streams, but it also recognizes the water needs of growing cities. Realtor Dennis Saffel says even more needs to be done.
Now it's time to take a new, fresh look at why it's important to keep rivers full of water.
A prolonged drought in the Southwest paired with overallocation has left the Colorado River in a sorry state. Front Range communities, largely dependent on that western water, are having some success with conservation. But with an additional 2 million people expected to move to the Denver metro area over the next 25 years, demand will only increase. For Connecting the Drops and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio Stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org. Support for this piece is provided by CoBank.
For KDNK News, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Thank you, Amy. I think we ought to work together to find just kind of what should be the mascot for the new East Bank School. My idea.
You.
Yeah. The Mighty Geezers.
The Mighty Geezers.
They're feisty. They're competitive. You can see the mascot now, a guy with a large head and extra nose hair. Intimidating as he stalks the sidelines. The Mighty Geezers of East Bank. Victorious once again. All right, we got a great day on tap here. 72 degrees for our high here in Carbondale. 71 tomorrow. Chance of showers, 20% chance tomorrow night, and 10% Saturday, 20% on Sunday. Halloween a little cooler than expected, 59 degrees, but just a slight chance of rain.